WrestleMania Backlash is this Sunday. No stipulation added to the main event. That's what I was waiting to see. I thought for sure they had two shows. They had Raw Monday night. They had SmackDown tonight. Tonight was the go-home show. Still time to add some kind of stakes to the six-man tag team main event on Sunday, but nope. Just a straight-up six-man tag, Roman Reigns and the Usos taking on Drew McIntyre, Randy Orton, and Matt Riddle, who tonight, they were trying to get over RK McBro. E-I-E-I-O. This pay-per-view on Sunday is basically a collection of WrestleMania rematches and a six-man tag team main event with nothing on the line. I am going to do WrestleMania Backlash predictions, though. We're going to save that for a little bit later on. In fact, we're going to do things a little bit differently this time because AEW Rampage was on before SmackDown. Usually it's the other way around. Rampage was on early tonight at 5:30 Eastern because of the NHL. And I will tell you that I could get used to this. Maybe not 5:30, maybe it's 6:30, but I could get used to the earlier start time for Rampage. I rather enjoyed knocking out Rampage first and suffering through SmackDown and being able to come on the air here a little bit earlier than usual on a Friday night. This is, by the way, your WWE SmackDown and AEW Rampage review for Friday, May 6, 2022. I am the Solemn Monster. Super chats are open. I will be reading all of them, on what was, I thought, a tale of two shows. Rampage, being taped from Wednesday, only an hour long, was actually a pretty good show. I actually enjoyed Rampage. I liked Rampage more than I did Dynamite this week. And Rampage was a hell of a lot better than SmackDown was tonight. But we'll begin with AEW, and we'll knock out Rampage first. And one thing that we learned this week, we learned on Wednesday the brackets for the Men's Owen Hart Cup Tournament. Finally, been wondering what the brackets look like for this event. Now that all the qualifying matches have been exhausted, we were given brackets. Well, tonight, we got the women's bracket. So now we know the brackets for the men's and the women's Owen Hart Cup. Right now, if you look on your screen, this is what I showed you guys the other night. This is the men's bracket for the Owen Hart Cup. There you see Rey Fénix one-on-one with Kyle O'Reilly. Samoa Joe going to be facing a Joker entrant. Jeff Hardy taking on Darby Allin. That's going to be taking place next Wednesday on Dynamite. And Adam Cole, one-on-one with Dax Harwood of FTR. And I'm going to have a lot more to say about this men's bracket and the Joker and who I think it might be and all that on the podcast on Sunday. But what we got tonight was the women's bracket, which you see on your screen there. And we have Toni Storm taking on Jamie Hayter in the first round, which we already knew those two were going to be on a collision course in round one. Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, gets the Joker entry. Riho, one-on-one with Ruby Soho. Riho and Soho. And we have Red Velvet, one-on-one with Hikaru Shida. And so these are the women's brackets. I will tell you, I thought we would get Toni Storm against Britt Baker in the finals. So that's a little surprising to me. If we do end up getting Britt Baker and Britt Baker and Toni Storm, yeah, it's going to have to be in the second round. But I think on the women's side, as you look at this bracket, I think whoever wins the entire thing is coming out of either the Toni Storm match or the Britt Baker match, which of course leads into a discussion about this Joker entrant. Now, the Joker entrant on the men's side, I said on Wednesday, the first two names that came to mind for me were Cesaro and Johnny Gargano. Now I look at the women's Joker. Who's it going to be? There's two names. There's two names that pop into my head. One of them is Candice LeRae, the wife of Johnny Gargano, who we found out this week has been moved into the WWE alumni section on WWE.com. Which indicates that she is no longer with the company. I don't think the company has commented. I don't think Candice has said anything about it. But it looks like she's gone. We don't know exactly when this happened. We don't know when her non-compete, assuming that her non-compete applies, people in NXT usually have a 30-day non-compete, not the usual 90 that people on the main roster have. Is it over? Does it not apply for some reason? Did her contract expire? Did it lapse? We don't know. So whether or not she can be the Joker in this tournament may depend upon her availability in that regard. But let's say that she is available. I could see Tony Khan bringing them in as a package deal. You get Johnny Gargano showing up as the Joker entrant on the men's side. Candice LeRae is the Joker entrant on the women's side. The other name outside of Candice that first name I thought of, especially coming off the interview that she did with Chris Van Vliet last week, is Athena, the former Ember Moon. It's been puzzling to me why she isn't already in the company. Even in the interview with Chris, she was saying, they got to make the call if they're interested. I'm here. I'm willing to listen. I'm available. She clearly, without coming right out and saying it, wants to be on AEW television. She wants to be working for a major promotion on TV. You only have two options in this country. You have WWE and you have AEW. And that's it. When you think of major promotions with major television, that is it. That is it. We don't even know if Ring of Honor is going to have a television presence. Tony Khan hasn't worked all that out yet. We're not talking about Ring of Honor. We're not talking about Impact. We're not talking about MLW. If she wants to go someplace where she is going to be noticed and on a major station for a major, major promotion, she's only got two options and she ain't going back to WWE. That only leaves one. All Tony Khan has to do is make the call, if he hasn't already. So I think Candice and I think Athena are the two most likely candidates for that spot. But tonight, on Rampage, we had Toni Storm and Ruby Soho teaming up against Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter, kind of giving us a little bit of a preview, I guess, for the Owen. I thought the match was solid. You know, there was an awkward transition at one point by Britt Baker into a lockjaw attempt. Where she took down Toni Storm. That was a little wonky. Storm set Baker up for a superplex. Rebel, not Reba, causes a distraction. That led to Britt taking Toni over with a double underhook suplex. Jamie Hayter immediately followed that with a sliding lariat. And that looked to be the end. I mean, Baker came off the rope. She hit a curb stomp to Toni Storm. She had her dead to rights. Ruby, though, had Jamie pushed her backwards into them, and that broke up the pin attempt. Storm rolled up Britt Baker for the win, which I think the announcer should have made a little bit of a bigger deal about, because Britt Baker does not lose very often. She lost her championship to Thunder Rosa. But Britt Baker is, in a lot of ways, she was like the Roman Reigns of AEW. Rarely did we see her lose. And so I think they should have made a bigger deal out of the fact that even though it was a tag team match, Toni Storm pinned Britt Baker, the biggest women's star they have, and they could potentially be matched up in the tournament coming up. But I thought Toni looked the best out of everybody in this match, and nobody looked bad. I mean, Britt was she seemed a little off maybe, but Toni Storm looked great. She looked the best out of all four of these women, I thought, in this match. Eddie Kingston was on the phone for Chris Jericho, and Chris Jericho, of course, does commentary. I mean, I don't know how you would not know this. If you watch the show and you listen to the show, it's impossible not to know that Chris Jericho is on commentary for it. So Chris Jericho was greeted by Eddie Kingston, who was calling into the show. Still at home recuperating from his injuries from the fireball attack 2 weeks ago. Or I guess it would have been last week. And Kingston was doing his damnedest, as he always does in these situations. He's doing his damnedest to sell this feud as best he can. I'm not feeling this. I'm not buying any of the Jericho stuff right now. I don't find any of it really exciting or interesting. But I know that Eddie Kingston is always going to try to get this shit over. And so here he was talking about how he's been with his wife now for 20 years. She's seen him in bad shape. But when he walked into the house this time, this was different. His wife was crying. Eddie says that that'll be burned into his soul forever. This isn't about wrestling anymore. It's about making Jericho feel the fear and the pain that his wife felt of knowing what happened to him. He's going to hurt Jericho bad, and he says it's going to be for his wife. So God bless Eddie Kingston. He's out here. He's trying to get this thing over as a real personal issue. But like I said, it's just hard to care right now about the Jericho Appreciation Society stuff. It just feels very flat to me, this whole feud. But Kingston is always great in these types of segments. In the back, Tony Nese was standing by with his manager, or his lawyer, his advocate, whatever you want to call him, Smart Mark Sterling, who's wondering why he has to force himself onto the show. How come all these other people get on the show so easily, and I have to force my way just to get television time on one of these shows? Sterling said that they are requesting a match with the kid with all the right friends, the undefeated phenomenon. And, of course, they were referring in this case to Danhausen. Or Danhausen is the one who Tony Nese wanted the match with. Not talking about Hook. He wants Danhausen. And Tony Nese wants Danhausen in his hometown. Tony Nese's hometown of Long Island, New York. Going to be in Long Island at the UBS Arena, back there for the first time since December for Dynamite next Wednesday. So that match is now official. Speaking of Hook, where are all my hookers at in the chat? I know we got some hookers. Look, a lot of hookers out on Friday night. I see them in the chat every single week. So show your faces. I know exactly who you guys are. We had Hook one-on-one with J.D. Drake. Drake hit a hard chop. That knocked Hook backwards a little bit, but Hook wanted more. He asked for another. When Drake went to deliver one, Hook gave him a headbutt to the arm. He headbutted the guy's arm. And then he suplexed him, which was impressive. J.D. Drake is no small man. And Hook picked him up. He got some good, you know, height on it, dumped him right on his head. Drake tried for a reverse DDT. Hook, though, flipped over in the attempt. He flipped over J.D. Drake onto his back and sunk in the red rum for the submission. J.D. tapped out. After the match, out comes Danhausen. And say what you want to about Danhausen, it's kind of like the Orange Cassidy phenomena. For all the people who will say they don't get Orange Cassidy, and why is he featured so much, and why was he always pushed so hard, which he always was. He was always pushed pretty hard in AEW. Now he's been out, you know, hurt. He can't wrestle right now. He's not cleared. But Danhausen, I think, is going to be the same thing, where a lot of people are not going to get Danhausen. I don't always get Danhausen. But he comes out, and he gets a reaction. And on Rampage, that can be tough, because people are fatigued. The crowd is not as energetic as they typically are during Dynamite. He came out. He got a great reaction from the crowd. And he's on the mic as he's walking to the ring. He gets into the ring to confront Hook. Fans are chanting Hookhausen. They've already given them a name. Hookhausen is their tag team name. And Danhausen asks Hook to be in his corner for his match with Tony Nese next week. And I think he put his hands on Hook, and that was a no-no. And Hook shoved Danhausen down onto his ass. And the people booed, because they like Danhausen. Danhausen reaches into his pocket, and he pulls out a bag of potato chips with a red ribbon on it. He has gifted the chips. They're birthday chips, because it's Hook's birthday. So he is gifting him a bag of potato chips. If you remember, he destroyed Hook's potato chips a few weeks ago, which is why Hook threw him up against the wall. So he left some chips for him, and he left. Hook looked down, contemplated what to do. He picked up the chips. People cheered. Then he had second thoughts. He put the bag down on the mat, and people booed as Hook walked out. And as Hook walked away, I just thought to myself, they're going to get this fucking thing over, aren't they? They are going to get this fucking pairing over. Not the pairing I would have made. But so far, the people are into it. And I'm telling you, if they end up going in the direction where Hook is going to soften, he's not going to murder the guy. He's going to soften. He's going to warm up to him. They're not going to be chummy. They're not going to go share a beer. They're not going to go put curses on people together. But if it develops into something where Hook is almost like protective of him like a pet, then I think that'll get over and that'll work. And it doesn't really cause any harm to Hook. And it doesn't mean he can't be serious and he has to be, you know, jokey or anything like that. But these guys are going to get this fucking thing over. People are into this. We had Riho dressed in all black. We haven't seen Riho in a while. In fact, we haven't seen Riho since her match with Britt Baker on the first Battle of the Belt special in January. She got hurt. She got injured in that match. So this was her first time back against Yuka Sakazaki. Another one, we have not seen her on AEW television in many months. She was back in Japan. This was the final qualifier for the women's Owen Hart Cup. I guess I kind of spoiled it by showing you the bracket already. You already know who advanced. But this was the final qualifier of either the men's or the women's tournament. Sakazaki, late in the match, went for her magical girl splash. She was coming off the ropes with a springboard. Riho got the knees up, though, on the way down, followed that with a snapdragon. Two of them fought on the top rope. And it looked like Sakazaki was going to try for a Spanish fly. And I think that's what her intent was. I think her intent was to take Riho down with a Spanish fly. However, once they got up on the top turnbuckle, Riho started to fall forward. And their momentum was taking them backwards. And so what ended up happening is they simply just fell down. Now, it looked like a flatliner. So if it was a botch, he could just cover for it by saying she just gave her a top rope flatliner. So it all worked out okay, but I think that's what happened here. I think that they were rushing a little bit, and I think maybe they slipped or she went a little too early, and instead of a Spanish fly, she ended up hitting. Now, I could be wrong. Maybe she intended to do the flatliner, but that's what it looked like to me. Either way, they saved it. It looked fine. They traded some elbow strikes in the ring after Yuka only got a near fall off that flatliner. Yuka went for a strike. Riho, though, rolled her up for the win, and Riho advances to the Owen Hart Cup. Again, the one funky-looking spot aside, I thought this was good. You know, I thought this match was perfectly fine. I thought they had a good match, won about 8 or 9 minutes. And it's good to have Riho back. You know, Riho is a tiny person. She is not the biggest woman that they have in that division, but she's very good. We've seen some very good Riho matches before, and I think her being in this tournament, Riho and Soho in the opening round, I think they'll have a good match. We had Dan Lambert in the ring. He was with the Men of the Year. And Lambert pointed out that, not that he's trying to get cheap pop or anything, but he is from Baltimore. They taped this in Baltimore on Wednesday. And so he pointed out that he's from Baltimore, but he says that coming here makes him sick to his stomach because just like AEW ruined professional wrestling, Baltimoreans have ruined the city and their crabs are awful. He can get better crabs, he said, from a streetwalker. So Dan Lambert healing on Baltimore. Yeah, having watched 5 seasons of The Wire for the first time, I can see what he's talking about when it comes to Baltimore. So Ethan Page said that they had a meeting about the mixed tag team match that they had promised to Sammy Guevara and Ty Conti. And as much as Page would love to scar Sammy for life, Dan Lambert had proposed a question to him the other day. Said, how would Ethan's daughter feel about being subjected to watching those two nitwits sucking each other's face? And he said that Sammy doesn't seem like a guy who keeps his word, and so neither is he. The mixed tag match is off. Frankie Kazarian walked out. He said that Ethan Page has a lot in common with Sammy Guevara. All he needs is an annoying blonde by his side, but he's got Dan Lambert instead. Kazarian doesn't care about any of this shit. He says he looks at Scorpio Sky, or he looks at Scorpio Sky, and he says that he's always believed in him. He's always been his biggest fan, his biggest supporter, but right now he's also his biggest threat. And he wants the TNT title match that he was promised. Ethan Page said that he's glad Kazarian is dressed for a funeral. He was in all black. And he said, you're dressed appropriately for a funeral because SCU is dead. And at that point, Scorpio Sky stepped in between the two of them, said that things were going to be different this time. He's going to be a fighting champion. He said the days of the TNT title getting passed around like Ty Conti backstage are done. That got a nice reaction from the crowd. He says Kazarian is going to get his shot on Rampage next Friday. So the TNT title match is set for next week. Lambert and Page clearly were the heels. Ethan Page and Dan Lambert clearly firmly the heels here in this segment. Scorpio Sky, though, did not come across at all as a heel. In fact, he went the other way. He came across very much like a babyface in this segment. And I think it's only a matter of time. If you remember a few weeks ago, I proposed turning Scorpio Sky babyface and having Ethan Page be the one to eventually take the TNT title from him. Ethan Page has impressed me on the mic over these last several weeks. He's very good. He's a very good promo. And I think that as we go ahead, I mean, Scorpio Sky should have at least a few months as champion. I mean, the last run that he had was awful. It was horrendous. He was the worst TNT champion of all time. So they should give him more this time around. But when the time comes for him to drop that title, by that point, my guess is he's going to be more of a babyface. And Ethan Page should be the one to take the title from him and give him a run with it. So I think he would do well. Back from break, Jungle Boy walked out. He confronted Ricky Starks at the commentary booth because the two of them are going to have an FTW title match on Dynamite next Wednesday. And Jungle Boy ended up holding up the FTW belt at the end of this. Main event was Jay Lethal with Sanjay Dutt and Satnam Singh in his corner against Konosuke Takeshita. I want to make sure I don't butcher his name here. Konosuke Takeshita. Or Takeshita, I'm sorry. Jesus Christ. I was trying to say the last name earlier as I was writing his name down in my notes. For whatever reason, I couldn't say the last name. I just couldn't get it. Couldn't do it. It was Taz, I think, on commentary also was botching the pronunciation of the name. It was Takeshita, though. He wrestles for DDT Pro in Japan. And he is very impressive. I'm very impressed by what I saw of him here. They showed highlights of all the matches that he's had on AEW Dark, dating back to the first ones he had early last year. And some of the more recent ones. Lethal did a flare strut early in the match. And Takeshita fired back with some chops. And then he did a flare strut of his own. I thought that was funny. I thought that was entertaining. After the final break, Lethal was setting up for a suplex off the top rope. Takeshita, though, turned it into a lariat off the top rope. That was impressive. A top rope lariat. Very impressive there. Lethal applied a figure four leg lock. Takeshita made it to the ropes for a break. Lethal went for another figure four, but Takeshita rolled through with a brain buster, and then he hit his jumping knee strike. He had Lethal pinned. He had him dead to rights. Sanjay, though, got to the apron to distract the referee. Lethal got the lethal injection for the win. This was really good stuff. I was not expecting this to be as good as it was. And that's only because I don't know enough about Takeshita. I've seen very little of his work. I know how good Jay Lethal is. And I've heard good things about Takeshita. I've only seen bits and pieces of some of the AEW Dark stuff that he's done. So this is the first time I've really had a chance to watch him in a meaningful match in an AEW ring. And he looked like $1 million out there. I got to go out of my way to find more of this kid's work. I think he's about 26 years old. Very, very impressed by what I saw of him here. And I'm sure being in the ring with Jay Lethal, it doesn't hurt. But I think it's also a case where he's that good. I don't want to just give Jay Lethal all the credit. This was good. This is a very good main event between these two. After the match, Singh and Dutt, they hit the ring. They were beating up Takeshita. All of a sudden, here come the best friends. Here comes Trent. Here comes Chuck. Orange Cassidy lagging behind. They were trying to make the save. It didn't work. Satnam, I will say this, though. When best friends hit the ring, because they stopped right at the foot of the aisleway, and they looked at each other, and then they said, all right, let's go. And they charged into the ring. Satnam Singh was standing there by the ropes, watching them and waiting for them to come into the ring, and they just blew right past them. They weren't even going that fast. Singh looked ridiculous. Like, it'd be like if somebody was going to throw a clothesline at you and you were going to duck it, but you ducked it as if you were moving in quicksand and you moved as slow as humanly possible. That's what he looked like here. So that was comical. But then he got the last laugh and he beat the crap out of them and he was beating the hell out of Chuck. Here comes Orange Cassidy. And Orange Cassidy got up on the apron to distract Singh. And before Singh could do anything to Orange Cassidy, he dropped down off the apron. Because again, I don't think he can get physical and take any bumps just yet. Samoa Joe's music plays. Here he comes. He's got a giant pipe in one hand. He's got his ROH television title draped over his shoulder. Bunch of security geeks stopped him at the foot of the entranceway. Wouldn't let him into the ring before he could get in there and charge at Jay Lethal. And that's how they went off the air. I said before, I enjoyed Rampage more than I enjoyed Dynamite. I thought Rampage was a better show than Dynamite was this week. And it's always a quick and easy watch. It's an hour. It zips in. It zips out. So, thumbs up. I did not get a poll up because it was earlier. I didn't even think to put a Twitter poll up. We'll take a look at the Twitter poll for SmackDown a little bit later, but I didn't get one up for Rampage, just FYI. But Dynamite this Wednesday. In Long Island, or on Long Island, I should say, has three first rounds. It's weird because WWE was actually on Long Island tonight. Long Island, look at that, the place to be. Strong Island, how about that? We've got three first round matches in the Owen Hart tournament coming up on Wednesday. Darby Allin is going to go one-on-one with Jeff Hardy. Adam Cole takes on Dax Harwood. And on the women's side, Toni Storm goes one-on-one with Jamie Hayter. We have a contract signing for Double or Nothing with MJF and Wardlow, where MJF is going to announce the provisions for their match. Ricky Starks defends the FTW title against Jungle Boy. Tony Nese takes on Danhausen. That's going to be Danhausen's first match, I think, at all in AEW, but certainly on Dynamite, that's his first match. We're going to get a victory speech from the Jericho Appreciation Society, Oh Joy, and CM Punk is back. He goes one-on-one with Long Island's own Long John Silver of the Dark Order. So that is your Dynamite lineup for Wednesday. And now we go blue because we have to talk about SmackDown. SmackDown tonight was the go-home show to WrestleMania Backlash on Sunday. It opened with Aaliyah. No entrance, already standing in the ring for her match with Charlotte Flair, who failed to beat her in last week's Beat the Clock Challenge, and so we get to run it back again, although the match ended up not happening. Charlotte came out, and she insulted the fans, and she said that she wouldn't be surprised if Ronda Rousey left the company again on Sunday after she loses to her at Backlash. She told Aaliyah that she would treat her like Ronda. She called her Ronda. She told her to come in closer, and when she did, she punched Aaliyah in the face. Flair worked her over. Bell never rang to signal the start of the match, so this was not an official match. Rousey's music played, and here comes Ronda. Here comes Ronda. She's into the ring. Here comes Ronda Rousey like she's doing the 100 meter dash. On her way to the ring, they had a very long brawl. Very long brawl. This went on for a very long time between Charlotte and between Ronda. Officials came out to try to pull them apart. They were unsuccessful. They kept rolling around in the ring, and Ronda was trying to apply various submission holds to her. I will say this is the best segment that these two have done, but that is not meant as a compliment. That's like me saying that this was the least worst of all the segments that they've done. I am not a fan of anything that these two have been doing on TV. I am not the least bit excited to see them on Sunday at Backlash. And this match is probably, if I had to venture a guess, my guess is that there's a very good chance this is going to headline the show on Sunday, especially because they didn't get to headline night one of WrestleMania, like I'm sure they were hoping and expecting to do. Especially Ronda won the Royal Rumble. Winner of the Royal Rumble is supposed to go to the main event of WrestleMania. Any other year, she would have gone to the main event of WrestleMania, except for the fact that this was Stone Cold Steve Austin's first match in 19 years. And when you have Stone Cold Steve Austin coming back for his first match in 19 years, you ain't going to be the main event. I think they're going to main event, though, on Sunday. I think there's a very good chance that that happens. And so, if this is the main event on Sunday, I'm not really looking forward to the main event. I'm hoping they go out there and they have a much better match than the one they had at WrestleMania. But not excited about this at all. They can have them roll around the ring and do all this stuff as much as they want to. These promos building up to this match have largely been horrendous. Horrendous on both sides. It's not just Ronda. It's really been a problem with Ronda, but it's on both sides. Terrible. Charlotte beat up Daivari. He was one of the agents out there. And she beat him up. Jamie Noble was out there as well. No Drew Gulak. Even though Charlotte's been abusing him now for weeks, no sign of Drew Gulak out there. He showed up later in the show. But for all the segments involving Charlotte and Drew Gulak, and you would think, well, it must be building to something, right? It must be leading to something. He's going to be maybe the referee for the match of Backlash on Sunday. Nothing. Nothing at all. With Drew Gulak and Charlotte, no interaction between the two of them at all on this show. Sasha Banks, one-on-one with Shayna Baszler. The women's tag team title match, it's going to be Sasha and Naomi defending the titles against Natty and Shayna. That happens not at the pay-per-view on Sunday, but next Friday on SmackDown. Sasha went after Shayna's arm early in the match. This is, of course, after Shayna stomped on Naomi's arm last week. Naomi was out there with a wrap on her arm. Sasha slammed Baszler's arm onto the announce table. Back in the ring, she hit a running Meteora and then caught Natty with a Hurricane Rana on the floor. When she got back into the ring, Shayna caught her with an inside cradle for a near fall. Banks came back with a backslide for two, and Baszler caught her in another inside cradle, but this time, Natty held one of Sasha's legs while the referee counted three, so Shayna Baszler picks up the win. After the match, Baszler and Natalya, they attacked the champs. Natalya tried to hold Naomi while Baszler was setting up to stomp on Sasha's arm, just like she did to Naomi last week. Naomi broke free. She kicked Shayna right in the head. And Banks and Naomi hit a double eat defeat on Natalya. I thought it was a decent match. There was one spot where Sasha was out on the apron, and she lifted her leg for what was, I guess, supposed to be a knee strike. Either a kick or a knee strike, but it missed by 5 miles. Shayna pulled back. So I hope the idea was that Shayna was avoiding it. I think Michael Cole said that on commentary. But I don't know, it was a little awkward, like maybe there was a hesitation there, and that was kind of their way of covering for it. I think she was probably supposed to connect with it, but there was a great distance between Sasha's knee and Shayna's head. But, you know, again, the rest of this was, it was fine. They were putting heat on the feud heading into the tag team title match next week. Pretty standard stuff. And then we have Baron Corbin. You know, this show, sometimes I will say, this show, it hurts my soul. SmackDown never used to be like this. SmackDown was the A show for a while. We're only going back a few months. It wasn't that long ago. SmackDown was the A show. And it looked like things maybe were turning in the opposite direction. Last week, Raw was actually a good show. So, of course, we get to this past Monday. Raw was not a good show. It was pretty much back to the way it always is. But SmackDown is just really lacking right now. And this next segment is one of the reasons why. Baron Corbin was out next for another edition of Happy Talk. Corbin started talking. He was quickly interrupted by Madcap Moss. On the Titantron, he was in the back. And he asked Corbin, "Did you want to start singing?" And Corbin was confused by what he meant by that. He said, "Because you look like you're trying out for a Pitbull cover band." He made fun of Corbin's tattoos, some more unfunny jokes. Corbin cut him off and said that he must feel safe telling all of these jokes, all of these bad jokes from the back instead of being out here. And Moss then walked off camera. They played his music. They have that stupid signature at the beginning of his theme song. Everybody has to have something at the beginning of their theme. Drew McIntyre has the sword. sound. Ricochet has the pew 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 pew. Moss has joke. Boy, we've come a long way from the glass shatter. Do you smell what The Rock is cooking? Holy shit, what has happened to wrestling? What has happened to this fucking company? How did we get from that to this? Joke. This show is a joke. Joke. He's supposed to be a fucking babyface now. He's not even a heel anymore. He's still telling bad jokes. And that's supposed to get him over. Here comes Madcap Moss. And Madcap Moss walks out and he gets a tremendous reaction from the crowd. You would think he's one of the top babyfaces on SmackDown. Except when they pan out and they show the crowd, nobody's reacting. Everybody is sitting there. Their hands aren't moving. Their arms aren't moving. Their mouths aren't moving. Unless they're chowing down on their Doritos or their fucking popcorn or something. They're just sitting there. Amazing. Where is all the noise coming from? I would love to know. Where is all this noise coming from? It's certainly not coming from the people who were sitting there in the building. So here comes Madcap Moss. He gets in the ring. He tells more bad jokes. And finally, he got the crowd to show some signs of life. He had them chant Big Bald Wolf at Baron Corbin, and they chanted Big Bad Wolf, or Big Bald Wolf. Big Bad Wolf is a fuck. Big Bald Wolf. And they started chanting. Corbin looked sad, and he left. He looked depressed, like he was about to go see his therapist or something. And he left. And that was the last bit of promotion heading into their pay-per-view match on Sunday. Their premium live event match at Backlash. That was the entire segment. This was horrendous. This is terrible television. I defy anybody to watch this and tell me that this is good television. Objectively good television. Objectively entertaining good television. If Moss coming out of Backlash, and I'll get to my predictions in a second on who I think is going to win. But if Moss coming out of Backlash doesn't get a gimmick change and a name change and a song change, joke, he's fucking dead. He's dead. He's dying on the vine. So now they're finishing out the Corbin stuff, but the Madcap stuff has to go. The fucking suspenders have to go. The stupid music has to go. The stupid jokes have to go. He's a great athlete. He looks great. He's capable in the ring. He could potentially be something. But this, I don't know what the fuck this is. We get to Drew Gulak. Out next against the mystery opponent, which turned out to be Gunther. This was a delicious Walter squash. I'm not one to usually eat squash, butternut squash, but I enjoyed some squash tonight on this show. And it ended predictably with him putting on the sleeper. He releases the sleeper, and then he puts him in position for the powerbomb. He powerbombs Drew Gulak, gets the high stack for the pin. Exactly what this needed to be. Nothing more, nothing less. They aired footage of Rick Boogs tearing his quad at WrestleMania, followed by the Bloodline on SmackDown the following week. Roman Reigns, when he hugged Shinsuke Nakamura. Then the Usos gave Nakamura a double super kick and left him laying like a fucking geek. So they showed that over again. In the back, Nakamura was being interviewed by Megan Morant. And Nakamura said that he hasn't forgotten what the Bloodline did to him. Said that when the time is right, he'll get a piece of Roman Reigns, and he will never forget. Then they showed Sami Zayn was hiding behind one of the production, I think it was a truck or whatever. He was hiding behind something in the back. Eavesdropping. We've seen Sami Zayn. He's basically become a snitch on this show. And so he was eavesdropping on what Nakamura said. Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods against Sheamus and Ridge Holland in a tables match. Finally, we got some life on this show. This was an excellent match. New Day was not playing. They were not playing around. They came out. They took the fight right to the heels, right away. There was no joking around. As soon as they hit the ring, the fight was on. Michael Cole explained that it was a free-for-all, no tags. The only way to win is to put one of your opponents through a table. So none of the confusing bullshit we got a few weeks ago on Dynamite when we had the Hardys in that tables match against the Butcher and the Blade and we didn't know what the fuck was going on. This was very straightforward. You put somebody through a table, that's it. Your team wins. Easy, simple, easy to understand, end of story. Sheamus set up a table on the floor. He wanted a powerbomb Kingston through it, but Xavier saved Kofi. Kingston then dove from the top rope. He got some height on this. He jumped from the top rope onto Sheamus on the floor. Sheamus was standing up against the barricade right in front of the timekeeper's area. And they shot this perfectly, and the replay looked great. Kofi got great height. He comes down. He lands right on top of Sheamus. They bust through the barricade, and they quickly cut to commercial. But this spot was great. Later on, Woods set a table up in the ring, and then he super kicked Ridge Holland. He placed him on top of the table. He was going to go, and he was probably going to hit that springboard elbow that he does off the ropes. Or maybe he was going up to the top rope or something. But either way, Sheamus cut him off. Kingston knocked Sheamus off the apron and then hit a running truss dive out over the top rope onto Sheamus. And Kofi was fired up. Kofi was in rare form tonight. He was fired up. He cleared off the announce table. He ripped the lid off. And he hit the Trouble in Paradise kick to Sheamus, who fell backwards on top of the desk. Kofi then looked over at Woods and started calling for him, telling him to go up. And all of a sudden, as Xavier Woods is preparing to hit something off the ropes, out of the ring, onto Sheamus on the announce desk, Butch, who has been missing, Butch has been found. He poked his head out from under the, like he's Hornswoggle. He poked his head out from under the ring, and he came out and he attacked Kofi Kingston. Ridge Holland held Xavier Woods for Sheamus to bro kick him right in the face, and then they put Xavier in the ring. Sheamus and Holland picked Woods up, slammed him through the table. Sheamus and Ridge Holland pick up the win. Butch, he pounced on Woods when the match was over and had to be restrained by his partners. This was the best thing on the entire show. I thought this was an excellent tables match. And Kofi Kingston in particular, he looked extra motivated here in this match. He was putting a little something extra on everything that he was doing. And so I enjoyed the hell out of this. And to follow up on this, because there was a mention on commentary of Big E. I don't know how many of you saw it, but Big E did post a tweet earlier today mentioning that he was told by his doctors that the healing of his C1 vertebrae is not going as well as they had hoped. And so he's going to probably be in a neck brace. I think I don't remember exactly the length of time. I'll have to go back and bring it up. It might be for another 3 or 4 months. He's going to be in a neck brace for a while longer. I think what they're trying to do is just they're hoping that it will start to heal properly on its own. And if it doesn't, he's probably going to need surgery. And it's unfortunate because there's a former WWE doctor who shortly after Big E got hurt, he wrote a whole article, I think, where he was interviewed. And he said, you know, the C1 fractures are very, very serious. I mean, that's why a lot of people, you know, it's literally life or death. And Big E is in the very small percentile of people who are very lucky not to have lost their life. You know, Tyson Kidd is another one. 95% chance that he would have died. And somehow he didn't. So Big E was very lucky just to survive that type of trauma to his C1. But the doctor said that the C1 tends to not always heal the way that it should. Which means that Big E may never be able to wrestle again. Now, I know that he's trying to avoid that. I hope he is able to. I hope his career doesn't end that way. But right now, I think the issue isn't so much as Big E going to wrestle again. I think the issue is just making sure that he heals properly and can live a normal life and, you know, pain-free. You know, as a fan of his, that's really all I give a shit about. I honestly don't care about the wrestling stuff at this point. It's such a bad injury. And you hear that, oh, it's not healing properly. And it's like, fuck, that sucks. Hopefully he can at least heal up enough where he can just live a normal life. Like I said, out of pain. There's always other things he could do if for some reason he can't wrestle. You know, he's got the personality. He's got the verbal skills. He's got the charisma. He can be anything he wants to be. He can be an announcer. He can be a manager. He can do anything. But it was sad to read that things are not going the way that he had hoped. Kayla Braxton was standing outside of Roman Reigns' dressing room and interviewing Paul Heyman. And she asked Heyman about Drew McIntyre, saying that he wanted to kick Reigns' head off. Heyman asked if she was flirting with him. I think she is. I think Kayla wants a little piece of the advocate, a little piece of the wise man. I mean, she's always stalking this guy, right? I mean, come on. Everywhere this guy goes, she pops up. She's like a clinger. Everywhere he goes, this woman is there waiting for him. If I were him, I would think the same thing. This woman wants something to do with me. I'd take a restraining order out on her at that point. Sami Zayn showed up. And Kayla walked away. Heyman pleaded with her not to leave him alone with Sami Zayn. And Sami Zayn wanted to inform Paul, or rather wanted Paul to inform Roman Reigns that Shinsuke Nakamura was flapping his gums about him, wanted to tell him what he said earlier, told Paul to tell Reigns that he would deal with Shinsuke himself. He would deal with Shinsuke for Roman so that Roman didn't have to worry about him. Heyman told Zayn that Reigns respects and appreciates him. Heyman assured him that he would let Reigns know about his good deed. At first, Sammy wasn't sure, but Heyman said, "Don't worry, I promise you I will deliver your message and I will let the tribal chief know exactly what you said." And off walked Sami Zayn. You see, and they say that the Jews and the Arabs can't get along. This proves otherwise. See, can coexist. After a break, Zayn went to go talk to Adam Pearce about getting a match with Nakamura next week. Pearce said, "Why wait until next week? We could do it tonight. In fact, we could do it up next." And Sammy wasn't very happy about that. He didn't have any time to prepare, but he said, "Okay, fine." So then it was time for the next and final, I hope, Lacey Evans promo. Michael Cole informed us that this was Chapter 5. There have been 4 of these so far. This was Chapter 5. She talked about her father overdosing 2 months before she signed her contract with WWE and reported to the Performance Center. She had another family member attempt suicide around that time, just before her first match. A family member overdosed not far from the PC. At that point, she realized that she needed to do what was best for her family and for her mental health. And instead of feeling excited about her first match, she was broken inside. Now she's ready to show the world that you have the power to break the cycles of abuse. Everything in her life has made her who she is today, and soon she will be the SmackDown Women's Champion. You know, the first vignette, if you remember, I raved about it. I was a big fan of the first vignette they did, Chapter 1. I thought it was great. Felt genuine. They dumped the silly gimmick where she just felt like she was playing a character, and she was talking about her life and her backstory, and it was compelling, and she came off as likable. And I said, they could have something here. They could have a big babyface star here for the women's division on SmackDown. Then we got Chapter 2, and we got Chapter 3, and we got Chapter 4. First one of these was the strongest. Everyone thereafter was progressively worse. It was the law of diminishing returns, I think, in terms of the effect that these promos were having. And part of it also was that there was a lot of repetitiveness to them. I mean, it's a horrible story, assuming that none of this is embellished, you know, for the sake of television. It's horrible. You know, the abuse of father and all the tragedy in her life, it's awful. I'm not making light of it. But these promos lost their effectiveness the longer they went on. I honestly think the 3 of them, that's all you needed. At the most, you do 3 of these. and then you put her back on TV in the ring. So I think they just dragged this out for too long. And I do think, you know, I like the first promo, but yes, as they went on, it does come off more and more as they're just, I mean, they're just going so far in the deep end of just, let's exploit this. And I want, you know, cry, and I want you to act a certain way. And, you know, they went really, it felt like over the top with this by the end here with this fifth one tonight. But that's not even the weirdest part about this. So we come back live to the arena. This was so weird. We come back live to the arena, and in the ring is the ring announcer. We've got Samantha Irvin standing in the middle of the ring. And she says, there's no question this has been a heart-wrenching story. She says, I think we've all appreciated the true Lacey Evans story. And before we introduce her tonight live, Lacey has asked that you show the proper respect. And so, ladies and gentlemen, please applaud and welcome Lacey Evans. And they play her new theme music. And she walks out. She's wearing military pants. She's out there looking like G.I. Jane. And she walks out and she hugs a woman in the crowd. And then she's waving and she's flexing her biceps, and that was it. She never even came to the ring. She just sort of walked out and waved and, you know, and showed her muscles, and that was it. Came across like the all-American babyface at the end of this segment. But the stuff that came before that, what the hell was that? Can somebody answer this for me? What the hell was that Samantha Irvin stuff? For a moment there, I thought, okay, this is a big swerve. We've had 5 weeks of this shit and tugging at the heartstrings, and she comes across as the ultimate babyface in these segments. You just want to give her a hug. My God, all the horrible shit that she's been through. And she's just going to come out and laugh in all of our faces and call all of us fools for falling for it. And it's going to be right back to heel Lacey Evans. The way that she was introduced, that's exactly what you would have thought. That was a heel introduction. I thought the crowd might boo after she said, you know, show your respect and applaud, just to be contrarian, because that's what wrestling fans are always doing. They have to do the opposite of what people expect them to do, because that's just the way wrestling fans can be. But I don't understand what the point of this was, and I guess we have to wait and see if there's another very awkward introduction like that for her next week. Maybe this does turn out to be some kind of a big swerve, and she's not going to be a babyface. But then why subject us to 5 weeks of this, only for her to then come out and say, ha, I gotcha. I didn't get the impression that's where this is headed. I think she's a babyface, but she got a heel introduction. This was just bizarre. Whole thing here was very bizarre. You know, I actually think that she can get over very well on her own. And she got a nice reaction from the crowd when she came out. I think people do like her, and they do want to like her. So I think she could become pretty big as a babyface without WWE literally begging fans to cheer for her and clap for her when she comes out to the ring. That's what they were doing here. It's like fucking Jeb Bush out there. Please clap. You may as well put a fucking applause, like an audience sign, like you're in a studio audience at a sitcom or a talk show. She doesn't need that. Very strange. We got a brief Raquel Rodriguez video. Blink and you missed it. I'm still waiting for her to actually work a match. We had Sami Zayn one-on-one with Shinsuke Nakamura. Nakamura caught Zayn in an armbar. Zayn rolled onto him to get a two count to break the hold. Nakamura set up for his finisher. Zayn saw it coming and rolled to the outside. Pat McAfee on commentary said that running from people has become his new finisher, which I thought was pretty funny. Nakamura went to ringside. He knocked Zayn down with a kick. Zayn crawled behind the announce desk, and Nakamura ended up grabbing him to pick him up, and Zayn shoved him into the barricade, gave him a haluva kick, and then raced back into the ring to get the count out win. Well, at least he won with his finish. You know, running away. That really is his new finish. So at least he won with his finish. It's the best thing I can say about this. Wow, what a way to build up Shinsuke Nakamura for a future match with Roman Reigns. Boy, I can't wait. I don't know about you guys. Hell in a Cell's coming up next month. Boy, I can't wait to see Shinsuke Nakamura after being kicked in the face and left for dead like an idiot a few weeks ago. And then losing the way he did tonight to Sami Zayn. Boy, if anybody should be challenging for the WWE Universal Championship, it should be Shinsuke Nakamura. I can't wait to see that match. Oh boy, I can't wait. This guy, man, he's going to be the one. I'm telling you, this guy, Shinsuke. This Shinsuke guy is going to be the one. All these months of dominance by Roman Reigns. It's like 2.5 years as champion. Shinsuke feels like the guy, I'm telling you. He feels like the one. I mean, just look at the way he was booked here on the show tonight. We ended with a face-off in the ring with Drew McIntyre, RK-Bro, The Usos, and Roman Reigns. Which really was mostly Drew McIntyre, Randy Orton, and Matt Riddle in the ring for about 2.5 minutes just telling jokes. Acknowledge me. And they would say different things. Riddle said that Randy Orton has the most muscular legs in WWE. He said, Drew, your legs are thicker, but Randy has more vascularity. Acknowledge him. And around and around and around and around we went, acknowledge this, acknowledge that, acknowledge this to the people who write this show. So the Bloodline, after all this bullshit, the Bloodline finally enters. Now we've got about 3 minutes left in the show. Roman Reigns is about to make his entrance. Now you need time for his music to play, for his CGI graphic to go, and then Roman stalks his way to the ring, and he takes his belt off, and they climb into the ring. All of this is, the time is ticking away here. There's like 90 seconds now left in this show. And the Bloodline gets into the ring, and we got a standoff, and then a brawl breaks out. Reigns hits McIntyre with a Superman punch. The Usos hold him while Reigns pounds away on him. Here comes Matt Riddle into the ring. I like that. Tundar, yes, acknowledge that like button here on this video. Acknowledge that. So Riddle hits Jey Uso with an RKO. Randy Orton hits Jimmy Uso with an RKO. McIntyre got the Claymore kick to Reigns, so he delivered on his promise to take his head off with the big kick. And that is how they went off the air. That was your go-home show to get you guys excited for WrestleMania Backlash. And by a show of hands in the chat, how many of you are excited for WrestleMania Backlash after that go-home show tonight? I'm sure you're all just, you're all wet right now with anticipation, right? You're all wet. You're wet with anticipation for Backlash on Sunday. Control yourself. I did say that we got a Twitter poll up for one of these shows. This is what you guys thought of SmackDown tonight. 20% thumbs up. 28% or 21. Look at this. It's changing in real time. 21% thumbs up, 28% thumbs in the middle, and 50% of you have given this show a thumbs down. Hell of a go-home show. Sergio is moist for Backlash this weekend. Sergio, that is a visual I did not need. Hey, Stephen McGarrigal, just subscribed to the channel. Everyone say hello to Sasha. Sasha Banks joining us here live on the stream. Well, even though this pay-per-view on Sunday might not be a lot to get excited about, you guys know that if nothing else, no matter how bad the show may or may not be, that I will be here to entertain you as best I can and keep you abreast. Yes, I said abreast of what is going on. So let's get into the predictions. And I am going to be live after the pay-per-view on Sunday as soon as it ends. If you are still awake, you can tune in right back here on the YouTube channel for the full Backlash recap. Backlash is Sunday in Providence, Rhode Island. We have four, count them, four. One, two, three, four. WrestleMania rematches on Sunday. Whatever you would consider the bare minimum to be, that's basically this pay-per-view on Sunday. They put the bare minimum effort in putting this card together and coming up with a compelling show. This is just, hey, we have a pay-per-view to do. Here you go. Enjoy. It's on Peacock. Nothing matters anymore. They already got their money. They're getting paid a nice, handsome sum of money by Peacock and NBC Universal. So to them, it doesn't matter. To them, it's just another month. We have Baron Corbin, Happy Corbin, taking on Madcap Moss in a battle that I am sure is going to rival some of the greatest matches that we have all seen in our lives. Moss is the new guy they're trying to get over. He should be the one to go over in this match, but he won't. Baron Corbin is going to go over so that they can extend this feud and piss me off for a few more weeks. Bobby Lashley tries to do the impossible by having a good match with Omos on Sunday. Omos will have MVP in his corner for the first time. There's no way he loses here. Bobby Lashley should not be losing to Omos, but Bobby Lashley, I predict, will lose to Omos. If they put MVP with the big guy and he still can't win, that doesn't bode very well for Mr. Omos over there. So I think he's picking up the win. And look, they're going to get whatever mileage that they can out of this guy. He's going to be like a lot of other giants that we have seen pass through the doors in WWE, where he's big, right? He looks big and scary. He's an attraction. We're going to push him. We're going to get him over as the monster, literally the monster push. And after a few months, when they realize we can't do anything more with this guy, he cannot possibly do anything more. We have tapped into every bit of potential that he has, everything that he can possibly do, and now it's time to move on. And in a few months, Omos will be a non-entity. But for now, he's getting the push, and so this is what we're left with. So it's going to be a win for Omos. We have AJ Styles going one-on-one with Edge. This was one of the matches I was most looking forward to at WrestleMania this year. And I thought that, they had a very good match, but they could do better. Especially on the finish. They could do better. So I'm hoping that's what we end up getting here. Damian Priest is banned from ringside after losing his match on Raw Monday night to Finn Balor. Was it Finn Balor? I believe it was Finn Balor. I can't even remember now. It was only on Monday. Good Lord. Damian Priest, banned from ringside. So he will not be able to interfere here in this match. But they never said anything about Finn Balor getting involved. He's not banned. Right? He's out there. I'm sorry, it was Styles and Priest, not Balor and Priest. Balor came out to save him when the match was over. That's what it was. And they did the whole too sweet. This is like a big Bullet Club week. So Priest is banned, but nobody said anything about Finn Balor. And Balor did come to AJ's rescue on TV on Monday night. I could see Edge trying to cheat, you know, grabbing a chair. Maybe there's a ref bump, you know, maybe. Balor gets involved in some way that leads to an AJ Styles win. Then they're each one win apiece, which then leads into a third match at the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view next month. Maybe even inside the cell if they have more than one Hell in a Cell match. But as far as Judgment Day and then possibly revealing a new member, I know there are some people who think Balor might turn. It's all just a swerve. Look, if you're Finn Balor, right, you're as low as you've ever been on the WWE main roster, right? He's had nice runs in NXT. He has never been as low as he currently is right now on the totem pole in WWE. So anything that they do with him, well, I shouldn't say that. That's actually a dangerous thing for me to say. But if they do something like a turn, I can't say it's the worst idea in the world, just even though people like Balor, but I can't say it's the worst idea in the world because maybe that's what he needs to give him the jump start that he needs. Because what else does he have going on for him right now? I wouldn't do it, though. I wouldn't turn Balor. I still think Rhea Ripley should be the next member. If they want to add a male member, there's other options. People have mentioned Ciampa by name. But I'm going to say that we're not going to get the big swerve with Balor. I think AJ's going to get the win so that they can, you know, pull off one more match between these two before they end the feud. We have Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins going one-on-one yet again. Cody has been on a roll since coming back, man. He's been winning his matches. He is going to run into a few roadblocks along the way on his route to the championship, his eventual championship match. He's not going to go on some kind of a Goldberg, you know, losing streak or anything like that. So there will be some stumbling blocks for him along the way. I don't believe that this should be one of them. I don't believe that at all. You know, this time he's coming into the... Here's the thing about this story. This is how I would sum this up. Seth Rollins has been on TV saying, the only reason you won at WrestleMania is because I didn't know who my opponent was going to be. It was a fluke. Now I know exactly who my opponent is going to be. There's no surprises here. I have time to prepare for you. If Rollins goes to Backlash and wins, he's proven right. WrestleMania was a fluke. That would be the worst thing that they could do. So I don't want to see any of this 50-50 fucking bullshit that we have with WWE booking. None of this 50-50 crap. Cody is going to be a major player for them at the top of the card. He should be pushed accordingly. Right now, he needs to win. He won at WrestleMania. He needs to go in there and win again. Solidify his win at Backlash by beating Rollins twice in a row. And that is my prediction, that Cody Rhodes is going to pull out the win. And that's my pick for that. We get to Charlotte Flair defending the SmackDown Women's Championship against Ronda Rousey in an I Quit match. Is it possible for me to say the words? Can I say I quit? Would that be enough to end this match? I'll say it right now. I quit. I quit. How's that? Is that good enough? No? I tried. I think there's a very good chance this closes out the show and these ladies get the main event that they did not get on night one of WrestleMania. I still say Drew Gulak should be the referee for this match. I don't know what the point of all those segments, but Charlotte was, if they're just going to drop any involvement with him at all. I mean, think about it. He was playing multiple roles, right? He was an announcer. He was a timekeeper. He was a lackey for Adam Pearce. It would have made sense for him to end up being a referee. Let's try him out as a ref. No indication. And maybe on the pay-per-view, they'll shoot some kind of a segment where he'll be the referee. Right now, there's no indication of that being the case. But I think it's something that they should do. They did the beat the clock gimmick last week, which was a fucking waste of time. But there was nothing, absolutely nothing came out of it. There were no stakes. There was no stipulation that if you win, you get some kind of an advantage in the match. Nothing. Nothing. That's why I hate the gimmick. That's why Beat the Clock sucks. It's a stupid gimmick that leads to nothing. So I still don't know what the purpose of that was other than just to fill television time. Ronda won. She got no advantage from it. Ronda Rousey is going to win the title. And if she is going to win the championship, then all the more reason, I think, to believe that this might go on last and close out the show. Which leads to, speaking of no stakes, Roman Reigns teaming up with the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, the Usos. Ed Weber says, I hope it closes the night so I can go to bed 30 minutes earlier. You can't go to bed 30... You can't go... Oh, shit, my thing fell. You can't go to bed 30 minutes earlier. That means you're not going to be tuned into the stream. At least put YouTube on, and then you can go to bed. You can't go to bed before I come on the air. What are you doing, Ed? I thought you were a fan. I thought you were my boy. You're going to desert me like that. Anyway, they take on Drew McIntyre, Randy Orton, and Matt Riddle. There was a report in the Observer this week from Mr. Meltzer that the six-man tag team match that we're getting on this pay-per-view on Sunday was always the planned match. The entire time they had intended to do this very match, there was never any plan for a tag team title unification. That is what he reported in the Observer this week. So now they are just blatantly lying to us. I mean, not that they haven't done that before, but now they're just blatantly lying to their audience. For weeks, they promoted a winner-take-all tag team championship unification match. They put the graphic up for it. They were hyping this thing up like it was going to be a really big deal. You know, like winner take all at WrestleMania, only on a slightly smaller scale, right? So they're promoting this match for weeks on television. When they started dropping little teases on TV earlier in the year, when Brock Lesnar won the WWE Championship at day one, and there were a couple of different times where he said, Roman, I'm going to go to WrestleMania so that you and I can face off winner take all, and we can unify these two titles. And I still wasn't convinced they were actually going to follow through on it, but we ended up getting a winner take all championship unification match. They dropped little hints and teases because they intended to follow through and give people the match, which makes sense, right? If you're going to tease a match like that, you want to be able to follow through and give the people what you sort of promised them. And seemingly they've taken the opposite approach here, where they've chosen to promote a match that they never, according to Meltzer, they never had any intention of actually delivering on. If you promise something to your audience, probably a good idea to follow through and give them what you promised them. Promised a winner-take-all tag team championship unification match on this show. And what they've ended up doing here in this match, they're giving us the inferior of the two matches. They've taken the winner-take-all match with high stakes, and they have replaced it with a match that has no stakes and is worse than the match they had originally intended to do, if this is not to be believed, I guess. But if we were led to believe that that was the match they originally intended to do, now they're not doing it. I'm not even sure, honestly, that I buy this report that they had planned the six-man tag all along. I don't know who's feeding him that information. I go back to what I said last week. It made no sense. It made no sense. I said this on episode 754. Roman Reigns is the one who said on television weeks ago, you guys are going to Raw. Jimmy and Jay, I'm sending you to Raw Monday night. I want you to bring home the Raw tag team titles. Bring me my titles. I want you to unify the tag team titles, so the Bloodline has all the gold. It was his idea. Then last week in the contract signing, Roman is the one ripping the contract up. And remember I said, makes no sense for him to be doing it if it was his idea from the beginning. Why is Roman Reigns in the ring ripping up the contract? See, what that tells me is that they did intend to do the winner-take-all unification match. And then they realize, well, if we want to get Roman Reigns on this show, but we don't want to do Roman against Drew just yet, well, shit, we've got no other choice. We've got to change course here. So they called an audible and they made a change and they decided to do the six-man tag. So I'm not even sure I buy that. I point to that as one example that tells me that they had a change in what they had originally intended to do. Because otherwise, that Roman Reigns thing last week is ridiculous. And it was never explained, even tonight. Oh, it was a setup. It was a plan all along. No. There was no mention of any of it. Didn't make any sense. So I'm not necessarily convinced of that. But since they never did go and add a winner-take-all stipulation to the six-man tag, there is no stip, there is no, like I said, there's no stakes for this or anything like that. Since that's the case, if it were me, I would have the baby faces go over. The Bloodline has been going over on virtually everybody now for months. Roman has killed everybody in his path. The Usos have been tag team champions now for 280 days or something in that area, something in that range. If it were me, I would give the win to the baby faces. After what happened at the end of SmackDown tonight, where the baby faces got the better of the Bloodline, which doesn't happen very often, the Bloodline is winning this match on Sunday. The heels are going to go over in this match on Sunday. And look, if they are going to headline with Charlotte and Ronda, then all the more reason you can have the heels go over. You don't have to end the show with it. If Ronda maybe is going to win the title to close out the night, maybe that's how they look at this. But to me, I watched the end of SmackDown, and there's not a doubt in my mind that the Bloodline is going over in this match. One of the reasons I wanted Roman Reigns to unify the top titles was because there are so few credible challengers for him. There's nobody. I mean, realistically, there's Drew McIntyre and that's it. There's nobody else. Nobody else. And so putting the title on him and unifying it would at least open up, they may not be the most credible, but it would open up more opponents for him other than just whatever we're left with on the SmackDown brand. And so my hope was that, you know, it would give them a reason to put him in a program on Raw and not just feature him on SmackDown, right? So it's been 4 weeks now since WrestleMania. We've seen none of that. We've seen no evidence that they're going to be doing that at all. So everything I had hoped they would do, they've completely aborted that. If they want to save Reigns and McIntyre for the summer shows, they still have one more pay-per-view to go before we get to the big stadium shows. There's three stadium shows coming up this summer. There's Money in the Bank at Allegiant Stadium in July. There's SummerSlam in Nashville in July. There's the UK show in Cardiff at the beginning of September. I don't think they have anything in August. If they want to wait, still a few months away, if they want to hold off on doing McIntyre and Reigns one-on-one, they have this one more pay-per-view. If it's me, and it's not, clearly, this would be a much better show if it was. But if it were me, I would have not only the babyfaces go over on Sunday. The person I would have go over is not Drew McIntyre. I would have Randy Orton get the win. And I would have Randy Orton get the win with an RKO to Roman Reigns. Randy Orton is still incredibly over. He's part of a tag team right now. He's one half of the tag team champions. You know, I get that. But Roman Reigns has not been pinned on television since December of 2019. Think about that. Roman Reigns has not had his shoulders pinned to the mat in 2.5 years. So Randy Orton going in there and hitting an RKO in this six-man tag and pinning Roman would be a big deal. And it would be enough to earn him a shot at the top championship. So all of a sudden now you've got a main event for Hell in a Cell with a believable challenger that the people like and that the people cheer for with a hot finishing move, man. They can't wait to see Randy Orton. Who's he going to drop next? Where is he going to hit the RKO from? Orton is still incredibly over. You can get a one-month program out of Randy Orton and Roman Reigns. You can get a match at Hell in a Cell, whether it's in the cell or not. You can get that match on June 5th. And buy yourself an extra month before Money in the Bank, before you even have to think about doing Drew and Roman one-on-one for the first time. Or you can just take Shinsuke Nakamura, who's been booked like a fucking moron on television, and you could put him in the match. You could do that match at Hell in a Cell. See how many people are interested in that. If it's me, I go with Randy Orton. That's who I go with, but I'm picking the Bloodline to win. So, like I said, I'll be live on YouTube on Sunday night as soon as the show is over with for the full review. I do hope to see you there for that. And I'll have more. I'll get into a little more detail on some of these matches. And there could still be a match or two added between now and Sunday. In fact, I'd be surprised if we don't have at least one more match added to the show. It's pretty amazing how many people are not on the show who have been featured on TV. We had an entire six-woman tag team match on Raw Monday night that closed out the show that I thought was actually, a pretty enjoyable match. I don't believe a single one of the people in the main event on Raw Monday night, of those six people, I don't believe a single one of them have a match at Backlash on Sunday. Why did that close the show out? The Go Home Raw. Why were those women in the main event on Monday if they're not even good enough to be on the pay-per-view? Bianca Belair doesn't have a Raw women's title match as of this moment. Rhea Ripley, Liv Morgan, none of them are on the show. Very strange. Very strange. Let's check out your super chats. I do thank you guys. You guys are the lifeblood of this channel. The most direct way that you can support here on YouTube, other than becoming a channel member, is to drop a super chat if you would like to, and so I shall do my best to answer you. Joseph Brooks, was too early? I think he means way. Is it way too early to see Walter as the Intercontinental Champion? No. No. No, it's not. I would have Walter. I would have Walter go over on Ricochet next week if it were up to me. So no, it's never too early to put some gold around Walter's waist. We got Dick the Cock Johnson. What's going on? Need AEW to do more matches like Yuka against Riho. Loki Agatho, $10 super chat, did not watch SmackDown. Smart man. And sending this before your review, and I'm positive SmackDown, that SmackDown is more enjoyable this week. You would be correct. Dr. Scorpio, $7. Thank God I chose to watch the playoff hockey and basketball instead of wrestling, which I still am. What is going on with these super chats? You guys got to get the grammar and the punctuation right here. You're throwing me off here with all these misspellings. Not surprised they not doing a tag title unification sounds like too much work or creative. Lazy. That's what it is. It's lazy booking. Rodimus Prime. Looking forward to the Owen Hart Cup. Both brackets are stacked. That said, who are your picks to win? I talked about the Owen Cup earlier and where I think which matches I think the winner is going to come from. It's hard to nail down one person when you have two mystery entrants in the tournament. It's very likely one of those mystery entrants might win. But I talked about that earlier. I will talk about this again on the podcast on Sunday. I will get into great detail about the tournaments on... did I say SmackDown? What did I say? The podcast, episode 755 on Sunday. But Rodimus, thank you for the love. I appreciate it. Dry chicken without flavor. Baltimore was happy to see Britt Baker lose because she is a Pittsburgh Steelers fan and the city of Baltimore hates Pittsburgh. Mark K with the $20 super chat. Thank you, Mark. Smart Mark dropping $20 here on the street. We have Slipper House Extra Extra. $4.99 super chat. Danhausen should get Hook a poster of Eric Estrada for his bedroom because he loves chips. Awful. Samoan Fan 101 with the $2. Watch Josh Alexander against Ishii tomorrow night. Oz and Glory has been enjoying your hog commentary on the replays. Tony Khan has been listening to the fans on Twitter. Can we lobby for you and JD to replace Paul White and Mark Henry? So you want us to become the new team on Dark Elevation? Is that what you are inquiring about? Well, only you guys can make it possible if that's how you feel. I certainly won't get in your way. Tony Khan is very receptive to feedback on social media of late. So you might actually get his attention. KD, what show? What show are you referring to in the chat? I have no idea what show you're talking about. I was 10 when that show was on. I don't know what show. But thank you, Oz. Yeah, there is some content up on the Hog YouTube channel. Some recent matches and stuff that I've done where me and JD, our commentary can be heard. So if you've never heard any commentary from either of us, head on over to YouTube and check it out. Dry chicken without flavor. To honor Hook's chips, buy, sell, or throw away. Lay's chips, Doritos, or Tostitos. Well, I used to eat Doritos, but not for a very long time, so I will eliminate those. They're too messy. Get the orange fingers and everything. I would go Tostitos and then Lay's and then Doritos. I like Tostitos. I don't even need anything to dip them. Just the chip. Meaty Sentai VA. Thumbs up stream as usual. P.S. The VA stands for voice actor. That's why I didn't say Virginia this time. So, yes. Okay, voice actor. I will try to remember that. But Meaty Sentai, thank you for the $2. Stefan Beck, $4.99 super chat. I was at SmackDown tonight, and the crowd was very much alive for the show. Good show at the Coliseum. That's right, Nassau Coliseum they were at. They were at the Nassau Coliseum tonight. I have seen many a show at the Nassau Coliseum. And typically, the Nassau Coliseum is a terrible crowd. So, anytime that you can see any signs of life in that building is a positive. Spaghetti. Okada and Punk against Omega and Ospreay at Forbidden Door. Omega pins Punk to set up a championship match at All Out. What do you think? So you would put Okada and Punk together as partners against Omega and Ospreay. That's an interesting match. I don't see them doing it. I think it's going to be AEW versus New Japan. I don't know that they're going to mix the teams like that. It'd be a great match, though. And it would be a nice way to build to an Omega Punk match, which would be a huge main event for them to do. So I'm not against it. Dr. Scorpio. Why didn't WWE do this with Lacey Evans in the first go-round instead of having her doing the Southern Belle? She could have been a star at this point, but then again, this is creative that we are talking about because everybody has to play a gimmick. Everybody has to play a character like they're an actor or an actress. I mean, look at NXT 2.0. Look at all the gimmicks on that show, right? Everybody has to play, and some gimmicks are fine, right? It's not UFC where everybody needs a personality profile on their real self, but I do think a little more realism and authenticity would help this product out a lot. They've gone too far. I think they've strayed too far to the other end. And so it's nice to see her actually just letting us know. She has a compelling story. It's all in how you tell the story. I never knew any of this stuff about her. So it's nice to find out about it. But at the end of the day, what's going to matter is when she gets back in the ring. You know, how does she work in the ring? It's been so long. That will tell the tale, I think, about whether or not the fans will get behind her. Dr. Scorpio says, no, I am dry with boredom. Also, I didn't even know the pay-per-view was this Sunday, LOL. Last Super Chat, thanks for the review and back for watching the playoffs. James Hollins, have Bullet Club overstayed their welcome? They debuted in 2013. I think they did a while ago. I know now there's been some stuff that happened, you know, in New Japan at the recent show. Try to breathe some life back into it. The Bullet Club isn't what it used to be. Darth Panic, buy or sell? Captain Insano against Shaq. I'm going to sell. Hollywood Guy with the $5. Which wrestler do you want to take the title from Roman? And who do you want to see in Judgment? Judgment Day, I assume he means. I said Rhea Ripley in Judgment Day, and I think Cody Rhodes should take the title from Roman. Jay Baker, Russo recently said, well, you lost me there. Shin Akuma, $2 super chat, under the weather, came to show support. Thank you, Shin. And I hope you feel better. Jay Baker, I'll go back to Jay, I'm just kidding. We love Jay Baker. Thank you for the $4.99. He said, Russo recently said on Hannibal that he's willing to debate Cornette on pay-per-view for charity. Can't wait for Cornette's reply. Who would you root for? I'm never gonna root for Russo in these situations, so I would root for Cornette by default. But honestly, it's just what is the point? What would even be the point? There's no point. Now, if you lock the two of them in the same room together and shut the door, put a camera in the room, I would watch that. Otherwise, this is pointless stuff, and you know, Hannibal, whatever. Let's end this week with some Be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to Be the Booker.
It is time to Be the Booker. We've actually booked a few good ones this week. Over the last week or so. We had, a pretty good night on Wednesday, as I recall. So let's hope. I'm really hoping we have a good night tonight. We begin with the men. AEW has their men's and women's Owen Hart Foundation tournaments. We've got Be the Booker. And we're going to start with the men here. And we land on Damian Priest, the former United States champion. Damian Priest. What did I book the other night? Was it Mr. Perfect, I think, against Dusty Rhodes, right? Oz and Glorious with the $2 says Kim Wexler is better than Wendy Bird. Wendy Bird is a mean bitch. Wendy Bird is one of the most... Wendy Bird is honestly one of the more evil characters that I have ever seen on a television show. And it's amazing to see the transformation. I think she was always evil, but it just came out more and more as the show wore on. But anyway, Damian Priest, let's see who he's going to be stepping into the ring with in the main event. It will be Damian Priest one-on-one with Malakai Black. Now there's a great match. There's a great match right there. Malakai Black. Hey, I'm giving Malakai more booking time here than Tony Khan is. If Tony Khan won't book him in a singles match on TV, then fuck it, I will. What do you guys think about that? Damian Priest and Malakai Black. What kind of match would those two have? Right, about the same size, I think, right? Priest maybe is a little bit taller, but they're both big guys. I think that'd be a pretty good match. Over on the women's side, Mako Satomura. I wanted to hit it real quick to see who it would land on. Mako Satomura. The former, well, not former. She is the current NXT UK Women's Champion. Actually, I picked her a few weeks ago. It might have been against Lacey Von Erich. I swear to God, if I land on Lacey Von Erich again, I'm going to smash something. I'm going to smash, I don't know what. I'm going to lose my fucking mind if I land on Lacey Von Erich. Almost 150 women in this fucking animation. If I land on her again. Let's see who Mako is stepping into the ring with. It'll be Mako Satomura one-on-one with Trish Stratus. Hey, not bad. Not bad at all. Damian Priest against Malakai Black, Trish Stratus. Seven-time WWE Women's Champion. One-on-one with Mako Satomura. We did good. We did good. That's how you end the week on a high note. That's how you end the week on a high note. Pretty good. 5 stars, right? There you go. Dry Chicken gives it 5 stars. It's hard to get 5 stars from Dry Chicken. So when I do, I feel like I've accomplished something here. So I'm pretty happy about that. I'm on a hot streak. We're in a hot booking period here. All right, so like I said, guys, I'm going to be live on YouTube Sunday night. As soon as WrestleMania Backlash is off the air, I will be on the air talking about it. So come on back. But you get 2 podcasts in one day on Sunday. Earlier in the day, episode 755, we have much to discuss, including the Forbidden Door sellout. Tessa Blanchard, Eric Bischoff gets owned on his own fucking podcast. A lot of stuff to get into. NXT Spring Breakin'. And your questions, email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com, and I might be able to answer your question on the air during the mailbag. So I hope to see you guys back here on Sunday, and then live next Wednesday for what is shaping up to be a pretty big episode of AEW Dynamite. At Solomonster on Twitter, go vote in the poll. 21% thumbs up, 50% thumbs down. That right there is the story of SmackDown tonight. Sad that SmackDown has come to this, but that's just how it goes. Smash that like button on the way out, and I will see you guys on Sunday. Until then, have yourselves a great weekend.